In the past few weeks, we have shared a few conversations about the Moccasin Bend National Archaeological District here in Chattanooga. For nearly four decades, Sally Robinson has played a role in revitalizing the downtown and riverfront development, including three terms on the Chattanooga City Council and the long road to Moccasin Bend as it is today. Forever Moccasin Bend is the fundraising effort led by National Park Partners, starting with opening the gateway that will add park and new visitor amenities at the district's gateway site. I spoke with Sally and with Tricia Mims, Executive Director of National Park Partners. Sally, Tricia, thanks for joining us.
We're glad to be here. Thanks for having us this day.
Thank you.
Set the scene for us about Moccasin Bend and your connection to it.
Well, the interesting thing about Moccasin Bend is it's right across the Tennessee River from downtown Chattanooga. This is a national park. It's in an urban setting, which is unusual. It means it's easy to get to, it's accessible, and we are just at the beginning of creating quite a destination for visitors and residents alike to learn about our local history and to experience the outdoors just a few minutes, really, from the heart of our downtown.
And not only experience the outdoors, but experience history. And not only history of the Civil War, but as far back as we can possibly imagine.
Well, you know, that's true. There's such an interesting Bend story. Of course, it's been there for, I guess, millions of years. But the story that is so exciting is that it's an archaeological treasure trove because there were Native Americans that were living there for hundreds of years, and they left behind archaeological artifacts that have come out of the ground, so to speak, and are educating us. Then we had Civil War history there because the ridge that runs down across the bend was where the Union forces encamped. And they were bombarding Lookout Mountain, where the Confederates were during the Civil War. So, yeah, there's a lot of history there. In fact, I've often thought of it as just sort of it's like a time capsule that's just full of history.
Tell us more about your experience with the Bend, how it inspired you early on.
Okay, I'll talk a little bit about what inspired me at Moccasin Bend. In 1982, I was appointed to a citizen task force that the city and county were putting together to make a recommendation to them about 600 acres of property that they jointly held over on Moccasin Bend. And I was appointed as a member of the county delegation. And right away, our group got together and we were funded with a very generous grant from the Lyndhurst Foundation, which has provided such generous and pivotal and visioning leadership and support for our community for a long, long time. And so with the funding and with our team on the field, so to speak, we began meeting right away. We went to Baltimore and to Indianapolis to see what other cities were trying to do that were fortunate enough to have a riverfront or a scenic setting. And so we began to learn some of the best lessons about how city planners and designers and architects are helping cities sort of recreate themselves for a new future.
And share with us your own experience out in the Bend. You've written down some thoughts about that, looking back.
Yeah, we gradually, as we began meeting, we began to understand a couple of things about the whole scope of the Bend and what the potential was there for Chattanooga, how unique it is. We were originally asked to make this recommendation, and I think that there were a lot of people that thought we might recommend that there would be some industrial use because the country was in a recession then, and this would be a way to bring jobs if we could put something there that would build on our industrial base. But somehow it just did not seem to fit because we were aware from the outset that the Bend had a treasure trove of history there, and we would be paving over or tearing up our own story, if you will. So after visiting these other cities, and based upon work that had been done many, many years ago, going back into the 1930s and 40s and 50s, there were so many people that felt it really, really needed to be a park. It really needed to be a national park. So our Moccasin Bend Task Force made the commitment that we would pursue that and at the same time take a bigger look at our bigger picture based on the lessons we had learned in Indianapolis and Baltimore. And I'll never forget the day that we had been working, 9 months, and meeting. We had so many consultants helping us, so many people from the city and county, professionals, everybody so interested in what we were doing. 9 months, we were still talking about Moccasin Bend, and our visionary leader who was leading our discussion was Rick Montague. And he walked into the room and looked around the table and he said, "Folks, we're on the wrong side of the river." And that was sort of when two stories started being told. And one was, what's going to happen with Moccasin Bend? And that's a cornerstone and a very important piece. But we really need to talk about our downtown and our entire riverfront. So that's another story. That's another conversation.
And then as far as the task force,
yeah,
this just took a lot of conversations, a lot of listening, a lot of coordination. Tell us more about what the task force contributed that led to Moccasin Bend as we know it today.
Right. Well, what we did after we secured the property with a national landmark status, which is kind of a distinguishing designation, it means that it's going to be guarded and kept safe until the final plans come in. I think it's forever. But we have been so blessed and fortunate to have been working with the National Park right along with this whole endeavor. They've been our just locked in step partners all the way through it. And what we did, though, we went out to the bend one day with an archaeologist, a local archaeologist, just to see the property. I mean, we were tasked with making a recommendation how to use it. Many of us had never even been there. We didn't realize that it's just literally, as I said, across the Tennessee River from downtown Chattanooga. You just go right out Manufacturers Road and out Hom Road, and there you are. So we all went out there, and they took us onto just sort of abandoned, overgrown parcel of land. And he told us, he said, "This is where Hampton Place was." Well, we didn't know what Hampton Place was. He said it was an Indian town in the 1500s. Of course, I'm sure the Indians had another name for it, but it was named Hampton Place at this time. So we looked around and there were holes in the ground everywhere. In fact, we had to be careful not to step in one. He said that those were sort of potholes that looters, quote, were digging up Indian artifacts and pots and keeping them for private collections. And some people keeping them, hopefully, to, when the day came, to put them in a museum. But at any rate, there was a lot of pillaging going on over there. And there was one really big hole that had been dug pretty deep. And the archaeologist sort of eased himself down into this pit. And with his trowel, he began removing charred, dark black charred earth about 6 inches down. And he said, this is what is left of the town. It had to be burned to the ground. And that moment, I described it later as having the strangest feeling come into me that the people who lived there were somehow spiritually present even today, and that they want their stories to be told. I just felt their presence. It was such a moving experience for me. And I later wrote down what I experienced that day and undertook a many years long study of the history of our Native American culture there and the history of the bend, with always thinking maybe I could tell their story. But I never could. I sort of outlined a plot for what it could have been. But I just, as I expressed it one time, I said I never had the courage to tell the story because it's too important to be fictionalized. It needs to be completely accurate. And that's what we're going to do with the bend. It's going to be an authentic experience for the people who visit there to learn about the history of really the North American continent. As I said, it's almost like a time capsule filled with history from prehistory through the 10,000 years of continual habitation on the bend to the Civil War history we share, and then to the uses today, which are sort of living and working on the bend. So it's very much a part of our downtown, and yet it's still very much a wilderness.
How does Hampton Place fit into the history of what we call the contact period and the Spanish explorer De Soto?
In the archaeological record, there are artifacts that have been carefully examined that tell us that the Spanish explorers did come very near Chattanooga, if in fact not onto the bend. We haven't ever uncovered a steel breastplate or a spear, Spanish spear or anything, but nevertheless, the history does seem to indicate that there has been contact, very close contact, with the Spanish explorers. Well, that's called the contact period, and that happened around 1540. Well, what happened after that? The Native Americans did not have any immunity to the diseases that the invaders, these explorers, these Spanish conquistadors brought with them. And it just leashed upon the city and the Southeast, and in fact, the United States after this contact period, so much disease and measles and terrible chickenpox, smallpox, and it almost decimated the entire native population in some places. In fact, it did. And then later, after so much history passed, several hundred years later, as we know, there was a removal of our Native American occupants here to Oklahoma across what's known as the Trail of Tears. And when you go on to Moccasin Bend in your own backyard across the river from your downtown, you can actually walk the Trail of Tears. Part of it crosses the bend, and it's clearly marked by the national park signage. It's a safe, easy walk, and you can experience and see what those people were feeling when they were being forced to leave this homeland, this Chattanooga Valley. So that's another reason the Hampton Place and the Native history is so important. And there's another feature of history there for Civil War buffs. They can go up onto the ridge, end of Stringer's Ridge that comes out onto the bend there, and stand there and look straight up at Lookout Mountain and see where some of the battle was fought during the campaign in Chattanooga. Those, I think they call them ramparts, are still there where the cannons were implanted and where they installed and where they would fire all the way from Moccasin Bend up onto Lookout Mountain. So, you know, it's not just a place to go and look. It's a place to go and walk and experience nature and to learn the real stories. Nothing fictionalized about any of this. This is authentic history, and it's fun.
And Tricia, we hear this again and again and again in our conversations that we have had this month. The experience of nature and encountering many threads of history, including and especially the difficult ones.
Definitely. I mean, there's a lot of, as Sally mentioned, layers of stories, just history going back millennia that are sometimes a little bit, we need to kind of tell those stories that are maybe a little uncomfortable, that yes, there were people who lived here and this was their home and they were forced to relocate to another home against their will. And just how tragic is that? So yes, there are a lot of ways that this piece of land is kind of a reckoning place, right? We need to come to terms with some of maybe the darker chapters of our history, but also really kind of celebrate the fact that these cultures were thriving in this area and how much we all still as Chattanoogans kind of are drawn to these places, as Congressman Womp said last week, where the plains meet the river meets the mountains. It's just such a natural place that humans want to gravitate towards. So I think there's both joy and triumph as well as sort of the more tragic stories of despair all wrapped up in one 800 acre piece of land. It's truly remarkable.
And it's not only about nature and history side by side, but it's also an opportunity because you could be talking about just one of those threads of nature and one of those threads of history, but you have so many threads of nature and so many threads of history all intertwined at this one spot.
Exactly. So no matter how you come to Moccasin Bend, if it's looking for a place to hike or if you want to kind of get to know a little bit more about the indigenous culture, history of the bend, or if you're a Civil War buff, no matter what's bringing you to Moccasin Bend, you're going to learn and be engaged with the full scope of the story. So it's really got something for everyone, but you'll come away maybe with a deeper and richer experience than what you set out to find there.
How will Forever Moccasin Bend deepen and enrich that experience even further than today?
Well, the first phase of Forever Moccasin Bend is creating this entrance. You know, when you arrive at a national park, you kind of expect to see certain amenities or at least become oriented to the property through sort of a welcome center. So this first phase of opening the gateway is going to provide that welcoming entrance. The next phase of Forever Moccasin Bend, which will come after the firing range is relocated off the bend, is what Sally was describing, access to those Civil War earthworks and new hiking trails up onto Stringer's Ridge. Right now, you can access those through ranger-guided programs, but they're not open to the public year-round yet because of the firing range. So once that's relocated, then this whole new area of Moccasin Bend will be opened up to the public year-round through a new trail system on Stringer's Ridge. And then finally, sometime in the hopefully near future, we'll establish a full-blown visitor center there at the gateway site. Everything we're doing now to open the gateway is sort of the parking, the restrooms, the pavilion, some interpretive displays and walkways, everything but the visitor center. But that's coming later. That will have more detailed exhibits, maybe some photographs of the artifacts that have been found. And really kind of the Forever Moccasin Bend, we're thinking this is a multi-phased campaign. But over time, it's really going to continue to peel back the layers and really engage people deeper and deeper in the Moccasin Bend as the years go by.
And Sally, I've been asking this of everyone in all of our conversations. When we think of a favorite spot or spots out there on the bend, which spots come to your mind?
Well, I have to go back to the day on the bend, the first time I ever went there, when I was standing at that open pit looking down in there, and the archaeologist told us that that was a home. It was where someone had lived. And the reason that hole had been dug there, Ray, was because the Native Americans buried their dead under their homes. And he was, in effect, standing in a grave that had held the treasures that family had buried with that deceased family member, and they had been taken. And I hope they're in a safe place and they'll someday be returned to our wonderful visitor center when it's built and we can see for ourselves their beautiful artwork and the things they created. But I have to say that that was the defining moment for me, that I had been given a wonderful opportunity to be on this task force. We worked 3 years. We had a sunrise date. It was in 1982, and our sunset date was 1985. We had to make the commitment that we were not going to end up publishing a report that would sit on a dusty shelf somewhere and never be enacted. It had to be something that would really turn into a transformative project and an event for our city. And as I said, there's another story, you know, that we can talk about later, but ultimately that effort put forth the Tennessee River Park Master Plan, of which Moccasin Bend is a cornerstone. And this was a 20-year, $750 million plan, which seemed like a lot of money at the time, that would be built out over the year, and it would develop a linear park along the Tennessee River that would be for our residents. We didn't want our city to just turn into a tourist destination. We wanted something that the people who live and work and pay taxes here could enjoy. And so it's been built out now. And just look at what's getting ready to happen over on Moccasin Bend. How many American cities have a 600 or 800 acre national park right in their urban footprint? They're not many. We're very, very unique in that regard. And I think it's going to be a mecca for people visiting our area to want to come there and see it for themselves.
And Tricia, when you hear Sally talking about the bend, which spot or spots come to your mind?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to be on some of the ranger programs that go up on Stringer's Ridge to see those earthworks that really are some of the best preserved cannon ramparts anywhere in the Civil War battlefields. So that's a pretty special spot, and you can really, when you're up there on that southern end of Stringer's Ridge, you can see Lookout Mountain, and you really get a feel for what it must have been like to be a soldier looking at the enemy soldiers just across the river and building up to these battles to come. But then if you just sort of turn 90 degrees, you're looking right across the river to downtown. You're looking at Cameron Harbor, you're seeing the aquarium. you're seeing what Sally described as this really amazing, impressive waterfront redevelopment of bringing people back to the river. I think that was one of the amazing things that came out of that Moccasin Bend Task Force and the Tennessee River Park Plan, was really opening up that riverfront to the community in a way that they had kind of been cut off from for so many years. And now to think about Moccasin Bend as kind of that last piece. Most of that riverfront plan has been developed. Now the last piece is to extend the Riverwalk to Moccasin Bend and really fully interpret this incredible National Archaeological District. It's all very exciting.
And where can people go online for more information about Forever Moccasin Bend?
Well, we have a website called forevermoccasinbend.org, and that tells you all you need to know about the Open the Gateway project and ways to contribute if you want to be a part of it. It's really going to be a lasting legacy that anyone can bring their friends and family back for years to come and say, I had a hand in helping create this incredible national park entrance. And so we're really excited to get the community involved.
All right. Sally, Tricia, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can listen to all of our Forever Moccasin Bend conversations online at wutc.org.